You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Oh, that's a good art.
Stop, Look Both Ways is a new book by Mari Savadan. It showcases some of the best of Mari's photographs from the 1960s to now. Mari was the bassist in the Blue Stars, who were the first New Zealand band to sign to Decca in the 60s. Their first single was released in England, Japan, Europe, Australia, the United States, and eventually Aotearoa. Audio Culture writes that their song, Social End Product, has become a hugely collectible garage classic over the years and has appeared on over 20 compilations, including the famed Nuggets. Mari first became interested in photography when he was gifted a camera for his birthday. Over the last 50 years, Mari has travelled extensively around the world, capturing scenes that evoke an emotional response. Mari also worked as a fashion photographer, a commercial director, and a studio photographer. I had a kōrero with Mari about Stop, Look Both Ways, and his career. Here's that interview.
What does the title of the book mean to you?
Well, when Deborah Coddington of Ugly Hill Press approached me with the idea of doing this book, I was really excited about the proposition to do a book, but also I found it was quite terrifying as well.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in today's society, I mean, I put photographs up on Instagram. I don't do it a lot, but I do it.
Yeah.
And occasionally you might get a like, and then the viewer moves on to the next image, and three or four images later, your image is totally forgotten about. It's another thing to put images, photographs into a book and expect people to buy that book.
Yeah.
So I had to get my head around that. And eventually I came up with the idea of placing the images so that the one on the left-hand page reacted, bounced off in some way to the image on the right-hand page. And then once I sort of got that kind of broad concept together, I started playing around with images, and I thought we were onto something. And then Deborah, in fact, came up with the title, Stop, Look Both Ways. She came up with it pretty much straight away, and that was perfect. So that kind of, in broad terms, gives an idea about what the theme of the book is.
Yeah, beautiful. There's also that sort of the final two photographs sort of mirror one another as well, which made me sort of think of that title again.
Really? Yeah, I saw those last two images. They're the images of the balconies.
Yeah.
The balconies up in Havana. Yeah, I saw that as kind of like a full stop.
Yeah, right. Because they sort of finish off the collection.
Yeah, yeah, that's right, yeah.
You were in a band called the Blue Stars, who were the first New Zealand band to sign to Decca in the 60s.
Yes.
How did this come about, and what did it mean for the band?
Well, we were like a lot of bands, like a lot of starry-eyed. I mean, I was a teenager most of those years. And, you know, we wanted to become famous, famous musicians.
Yes.
And we got quite a good following in Auckland, playing around it there. We played a lot of the time in the suburbs with various organisations, youth clubs, RSAs. They didn't call them gigs in those days. They called them dances, believe it or not.
Mm.
And so we were playing regularly and got quite a following. And occasionally people would come up to us and want to manage us, wanted to make us famous.
Yeah.
Until one day a guy called Terry Heyman approached us out of the blue at one of these gigs or one of these dances and came up with a "I want to make you famous" line. But just almost as a throwaway statement at the end of that, he said he had some contacts at Decca Recording in London.
Mm.
And you can imagine that that changed everything as far as we were concerned.
Yeah, really.
At that point as well, we had started to write our own songs as well as playing covers. And it was at a time when the Beatles were sort of approaching their, you know, when Beatlemania was fast approaching.
Mm.
And we learned that, I mean, they were so revolutionarily different.
Mm.
And one of the things we learned about them was that they wrote a lot of their own material. And so that inspired us to try to do the same.
Yeah.
So we'd written a few songs, and Terry had a contact, or he knew of a young record producer who worked at the NZBC, back in those days, in the 60s. And they had a radio theatre, which was where they used to have concerts, which they used to put on themselves, symphony orchestra and things like that. But it was also a recording studio. He had a key to this. So he told us that if we got in there early one Sunday morning, we could record until, I think, about 11:30, 12 o'clock. And then everybody started to arrive, you know, with their gear to set up for the concert.
Yeah.
And so we did that, and we recorded four songs and sent them off to Decca through Terry Heyman, sent them off to his contact Decca.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, in those days, everything was either, it was done by mail or occasionally telegrams.
Yeah.
And so we sent it off. It probably went airmail. We probably scraped up the money to send it by air. And sometime later, I forget exactly how long, but it was a month or two, we got a telegram from them saying they liked two of the songs, and they were going to release them. So you can imagine how we felt about that.
Yeah, for sure.
And so that's what happened. And, of course, the thing was, it was quite bizarre, really, because when you think about it, especially in today's terms, it's really bizarre, because there was absolutely no publicity attached to it at all. We were never asked by Decca to provide any material, even photographs of us. So it was released all over the place. It was not just released in England, but it was released in Japan and Europe and Australia and America.
Yeah.
And eventually it was released here. And it did okay here. It got to about number 11, I think, on Hit Parade here. And we were pretty pleased with that because, you know, the people who were at number 10 or were like the Kinks or Sonny and Cher, you know, big, big names. We thought, God, we're with this lot. That's not too bad.
So, yeah. No, not bad at all.
Yeah, so you can imagine that we thought that this was all pretty good.
Yeah.
And that we were on our way, but of course we weren't.
Yeah.
But it was very exciting, and for just a bunch of young lads who had sort of stars in their eyes, if you like, but probably deep down, you know, knew it was going to be hard work. It was a good dream to have for a little while.
Yeah, certainly. It's awesome. It's amazing.
Here is the Blue Stars Social In Product now.
Product. Social product. Social
So how then did you become a photographer?
Well, I was given a camera for my birthday.
Mm.
Unbelievable. My girlfriend at the time gave me a camera.
Yeah.
It was very generous of her, but I don't know what prompted her to give me a camera.
Yeah.
But she did, and I kind of quite liked it as soon as I got it. So I started just wandering around taking pictures with my camera. I remember going down to the waterfront, down to the wharves. In those days, they had a wharf where all the fishing boats would come in. There still are a few, but back then it was huge.
Yeah.
And I used to love wandering around taking photographs of the fishing boats and all of the stuff going on. That I just remember that as well as taking photographs of other things. Before long, I started to develop these photographs in my parents' kitchen, which I tried to turn into a darkroom at night, using very, very primitive gear. I do remember that I started taking photographs of the band, and I'd just get my brother or somebody to click the shutter when I was in the picture, and started to get a bit more serious and doing a few portraits and things like that.
Yeah, right.
I entered into a few competitions, one of them being at the Easter show at the Auckland Epsom Showgrounds.
Mm.
And they had a big photographic exhibition stroke competition each year.
Yeah.
And I think I put some pictures in there, and I did quite well. I think all of the pictures got either a first or a second or a highly commended. A company was starting up which included a photography studio, and I was offered a job as an assistant in that studio.
Mm.
So I made the decision to leave the band.
Right.
That was when I was 20. So the whole band experience was over by the time I turned 21. And I can tell you something. It is probably invaluable. The experience I had during those years was just absolutely invaluable in helping me cope with the life of being a photographer, a freelance photographer, and the work I've done since.
Yeah.
Because being involved in creative endeavors, you know, you have triumphs and you have deep disappointments.
Mm.
And we all experienced them when we were teenagers growing up in the Blue Stars. And just that has helped so much in the ensuing years.
Yes. Yeah, and all creative pursuits are sort of linked in a way, aren't they?
Definitely.
Yeah, and those experiences can sort of be transcendent between those sort of interests or those passions.
Yeah, well, with me, I obviously had a kind of a desire for some kind of self-expression.
Yeah.
I've always been quite shy, and I tend to sort of stand back from the crowd, if you like.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I wanted to, in some way, tell stories or express ideas and things like that. And of course, with the band, that was the writing songs and playing songs and all of that was perfect. And photography was pretty much the same. Well, I've always been a strong believer in photography. Okay, you've got to be good technically, but the crux of it is it's all in the idea. It's all in the communication.
Yeah.
That's where it all is. And I think that's the essence of what the creative pursuit is, isn't it?
It is.
Mm.
Yeah. On that note, what makes a good photograph, do you think?
I think, it's a hard question.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
but when I look at a photograph, I react to it emotionally. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
And that applies to whether it's an image taken by you know, one of the great photojournalist war photographers like Don McCullen, for example, of all of those images he took in the Vietnam War. One image in particular is a close-up portrait of a soldier with the look in his eyes. Just tells such a huge story. But it's an emotional reaction.
Yeah.
And then I think after that you start to look at other things. You start to be impressed by the composition of it or just the way it looks, the tones in it. I love black and white. Yeah, so I think it's the same. Isn't it the same like when you go to see a movie? It's an emotional experience as much as it is anything, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Or listening to a song.
Yeah, exactly. And how quick can that song conjure up the emotions?
Yeah.
It's instantaneous, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm just looking at a picture I've got on the wall here in front of me. It's in the book. It's of a girl in a gallery. The gallery happens to be in Paris. And she's looking at a painting, which has got a rather decadent content in it. And just the way she cocks her head as she looks at the picture. And you can just imagine how what she's feeling when she's looking at it, or the question she's asking when she's looking at it.
Yeah.
And what I've done in the book is that I put that in the following page. There's a photograph of an older woman in another gallery, and she's looking at a painting of Christ, Jesus Christ, and she's studying that picture, and I just thought they worked so well together.
Mm.
The younger woman with her life in front of her, looking at this rather decadent scene, and the older woman looking at the painting of Christ, who has experienced some life. And I thought
yeah.
that told quite a good story.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Mm. And so that's part of what I look for, I guess, when I think about a photograph. Or it's not that you think about photographs when you see them. You're lucky when you come across stuff like that, and you just have to be ready for them, don't you, and you take the photograph.
Yeah, I suppose photography teaches observance and maybe empathy. I see photographs, I find myself, you know, you sort of just scour the photograph for the details. You're sort of drawn to certain parts of the photograph, and
yeah.
maybe you notice things that you might not in real life if you're just walking through. Or
yeah, that's right. So when you see something like that, I'm a photographer, I have to take that picture.
Mm.
There's no way in a million years I can't take that picture.
Mm.
I have to.
Mm.
And then often things just happen so spontaneously and so quickly that you find you're almost working like an automaton. You know, you just bang, 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 and off you go.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic. I love it. I just really, really like the process. I mean, all of my career, if you like, as a professional photographer, and also later on I got into directing television commercials, it was working in advertising.
Mm.
And where it's a whole totally different mindset. It's not totally dissimilar either, because would that be telling stories? But
yeah, true.
I mean, the book, I'm so pleased with the design of the book and the way it's been put together. I think there's about not quite 200 images in the book, and I think it kind of works. I hope it works.
Yeah, it does. That was photographer Mari Savadan speaking to me about his new book, Stop, Look Both Ways, out now in bookstores near you. You can hear the extended version of this interview on 95bfm.com.
Hey, this is Phoebe Bridgers, and you're listening to 95BFM.
Tuku pā tui mai. Text us on 5395. We'll be right back after a short break. Keep it on the B.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.